I will call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. So, Representative Brown, have you looked at the minutes?
I have. I moved the minutes.
Representative Brown moves the minutes of March 19th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Representative Ward has the long-awaited Type 3 bus bill before us. So, you are on the committee, of course. If you want to move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 116 to pass out of committee today and go to, I think, Finance.
Representative Ward moves House File 116 be recommended to pass and sent to Finance. So very good, and we even have the finance chair here to hear that motion.
Well, then we can do it all in one day, Madam Chair.
Maybe so. We're all after the finance chair these days. All right, Representative Ward, to your bill.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Members, you have heard this bill before, and I just want to remind you that there's an opportunity. Many of you have heard from your local districts. This bill was passed last year with Senator O'Sheen and Representative Bingham. The legislative intent was to make sure that our students' public safety is covered when they are in a Type 3 vehicle. The legislative intent was that for sure, meeting a number of criteria and qualifications for those people that drive Type 3 vans for their specific job. However, it was never the legislative intent to make the school districts or have the school districts meet those same qualifications, especially with the physical and the drug testing of coaches and advisors of people that temporarily or on a short-term basis drive Type 2 vehicles. So I'm, members, I'm going to just stand for questions. If you have any questions, this is a very, very good bill for the public safety of our children and also for the school districts. The school districts are waiting for us to move this bill to get it to the House floor as quick as possible. I think it's going to be up on the Senate floor soon. This will give some financial relief to our local districts in the form of an unfunded mandate, but I'll also make sure that our public, the safety of our children is of utmost priority. So members, I'll stand for any questions that you might have.
I don't see any questions yet, but I do, and Representative Deftey does have one. I will just say, too, that this bill now clarifies what we thought we passed last session. The bill authors were insisting that this is what they meant on the House floor and in committee, but then comparing how it was written to how it was interpreted, we now need a clarification, and I think it should be fairly simple. Representative
Deftey. I don't have a question, Madam Chair, but I just have a comment that I did have one parent call me and say that if we can get this bill enacted this spring, that it could save their district up to $6,000 to $7,000 this spring. So thank you very much to Representative Ward for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. A testimonial. And is there any testimony for or against the bill? Okay, hearing none, Representative Ward renews his motion that House File 116 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill moves on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
All right. I have a couple of bills, and I think I'm just going to do them from right here. And the first one is House File 2072 that I will move to be recommended to pass also to the Finance Committee. And members, House File 2072 is a bill that just puts a cross-reference language in statute that is already in another area in the governor's bill. And that cross-reference is for a cultural exchange organization to be registered with the Secretary of State in order for students to be eligible for state aid. I think it also, like the last bill, is very straightforward. Are there any questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. One, this bill came in later. I have no opposition. I'm not opposed to this bill, but for these bills that are scheduled later on, does the 24-hour rule still apply for amendments, or is that waived for these ones that kind of come in later on because of changes?
Representative Garofalo, normally we have more complicated bills than this one, and there would be we didn't get this one in for the 20, the, I could ask the staff, I didn't pay attention to the notice. This one was not in time to have an amendment put in. Okay, so it was introduced yesterday, posted as soon as it was introduced, and so if there is something, Rep. Zambrocki, I doubt you have anything, but if you do, I would entertain it.
Okay.
All right.
And then second question, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, is Tom Dewar okay with this bill?
Rep. Zambrocki, do I care?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Is there any other questions or any testimony on the bill? All right, hearing none, I'll renew my motion for 2072 to be passed on to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is passed. Now, the next one is House File 2073 that I would also move for sending on to the Finance Committee. And this one, I think you can read for yourself. It just removes that obsolete reference that we don't need there anymore because the year 2006 is passed. It's the general education revenue saying that for fiscal year 2006 and later, being it's 2009, I think we can do without that line. Any questions on this bill?
Madam
Biskin.
Madam Chair, not specifically to this bill, but with the passage of Representative Ward's bill, can we safely assume that neither of the two that we've looked at from you are going to be vehicle bills?
Except that this is one never knows what should become a vehicle bill. You were here, I think, for the surface bill, right?
I most certainly was, Madam Chair.
So this is the legislature. Anything can happen. We never know. All right. Any other questions? Representative Demmer. Or are you just giving the thumbs up to Representative Biskin?
You let it.
Oh, thank you.
Well done to bring up the...
We try never to miss a trick around here. And for those who wouldn't be in on that joke because you came to the legislature after the circus bill, that was a bill that was just a simple little circus regulation bill of some sort, and it ended up being, what bill was it? The whole...
Women's Right to Know.
Pardon me?
Women's Right to Know.
The Women's Right to Know bill, and we spent umpteen hours on the bill. I'm sure Rep. Carlson remembers it because he has that steel trap. But we're not going to ask him because we're going to move on to his bill. So, any testimony or anything on the bill? If not, I renew my motion that House File 2073 be passed to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is passed. Representative Carlson. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you. At one time, I served on this division for several years, and it's always nice to come back. I pointed out that in my history, for probably, I don't know, 18 or 20 years, I could figure it out, at some point chaired one education committee or another, so it's always nice to be back.
It's very nice to have you, and I would be willing to guess, even though I've been on this committee a long time, and you haven't been on it for a while, that you still served on it more years than I did.
May have. If you count, I chaired the Education Division of Appropriations for many years, and then I chaired the Full Education Committee, which had the three funding divisions attached to it for, I forget, 6 years, I think, something like that.
So, we count that. That's a committee that counts.
Well, that was the one that you were originally on, Madam Chair.
That's right. That's why it counted. So, so Rep. Carlson, I should move your bill. I will move House File 466 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and then you have an author's amendment, so I'll move H0466A1 and then call on Rep. Carlson.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, the author's amendment, when I presented the bill before the Policy Committee, I actually, as I was presenting it, thought, you know, there's one group, as I make up the State Board of Education with different membership that I had omitted, and that was someone from early childhood education. So that's what the amendment does. If you read that section of the bill, and I'll be explaining in a moment, who all would serve on a newly constituted State Board of Education. But I would like to add somebody from early childhood, and in the Policy Committee, I mentioned that that would be my intent when it came over here.
I suspect that we won't have too much quibble with that in this committee, but let me ask if there are any questions or comments. Okay, then all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Carlson.
And Madam Chair, as I mentioned then, this is a bill that would reestablish the State Board of Education. And I would point out before I present the actual bill that virtually every state in the union with two exceptions, Minnesota and Wisconsin, have a State Board of Education. We did until recent years, and if you go back very early in our state history, we had a State Board of Education by different names historically, but they all had essentially the same role. So, Madam Chair, what I've done with this bill, the membership of a newly constituted State Board of Education would consist of 12 citizens, at least one from each congressional district, and at least four to have been formally elected school board members. The Minsky Chancellor or a designee, the University of Minnesota President or designee, and as the amendment just said, one also from early childhood education as well. And when I was dealing with the makeup of the board, and when we were talking earlier about some of my experiences in education, just before my time as chair of the education ended, I had appointed a special subcommittee dealing with transitions, and I was trying to bring together early childhood, K-12, and higher education. And so when I'm dealing now with reestablishing the board, you notice that it would be early childhood, K-12, as well as input from our colleges and universities as well. So if you kind of keep in mind a goal that I had many years ago, it kind of fits into that context. The governor appoints the members with the advice and consent of the Senate, and there would be an annual meeting in August required. Compensation for the board would be the same as other administrative boards and agencies. That would be per diem and transportation costs. And Section 2 of the bill then reinstates the power of the Board of Education, removing them from the Commissioner of Education and including the authority to supervise educational agencies and adopt or amend administrative rules. So these were all powers and responsibilities that the former State Board had. And the arguments for the board, as I pointed out, Minnesota and Wisconsin are the only two with out-of-state Board of Education, but interestingly enough, in Wisconsin, they do happen to elect the chief operating officer or the what we would call the commissioner of education. So there is some public input in the state of Wisconsin via an election. But public education is the largest and most important activity of state government and one of the few constitutionally mandated roles of state government. So it also would ensure public access to developing educational initiatives, and that's what I feel we're lacking. It brings an informed statewide citizen perspective by having a board. It provides stability and long-term vision for results-oriented public education, and it convenes public forums for in-depth discussion and study of education, and at least one per year, and that's the one I alluded to would be that August meeting. By way of a little bit more background, members, there are essentially four, or I would argue, I guess, with Minnesota and Wisconsin, five different models, and I'll just mention to you what they are. One model is where the governor appoints the state board, the board appoints the chief state school operating officer. Until Rudy Perpich became governor, that was the model we actually had. And 12 states have that model. Model 2 has an elected state board, and they in turn appoint the chief state school officer, and 8 states have that model. Model 3, the governor appoints the state board, independently elected chief state school officer. So the board is appointed, and then you will have an elected chief, 11 states, and the Model 4, governor appoints state board and chief state school officer. So if this bill were enacted, that's essentially the model that we would have, where the governor would then appoint the board as well as the commissioner. So, Madam Chair, that's the bill. And bottom line, my main reason for interest in this bill, as I pointed out, 40% of the state budget, I would argue education is the most important state activity, and we should allow for citizen input, and I feel that that's lacking currently. And I was asked an important question in the last meeting, and it was I directing this at the current commissioner? The answer to that is no. I have introduced this legislation prior to the current commissioner, and even though she was surprised, but you mentioned my memory, I thought that when she was in the House, she was one of my co-sponsors to reinstate it. She didn't think she was, but I did check the record, and she was. But it's not, but she did pull off of the bill. I think she was number three.
Never try to out history,
I don't know if she's here today or not, but I did send her a copy of the authorship of the bill at the time.
Representative Carlson, that may have kept her away.
But I do want to make it clear, because I don't want to make the commissioner the issue here at all. That's not my intent. My history with it, I opposed the change when it came about. I've introduced the bill in the past. It passed the House in the past. The difficulty has been with the Senate. And so that's my intent. Nothing directed at any individual.
And as Representative Carlson knows, when it happened in the first place, it was a Senate position, and the House lost on this in the conference committee. And I was on the conference committee at that time and did not support it, but it prevailed. So is there any testimony for or against the bill in the audience? Many of us who serve on policy, it had a very thorough hearing there, so that may have headed off some questions. So if there are no questions, Representative Depke.
Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you that question again.
I've forgotten who had asked the question.
Representative Carlson, you had mentioned that Minnesota and Wisconsin are the only two states that don't have a Department of Education right now. Do they Board of Education? Do they have a Department of Ed as well, like we do in Minnesota, or not?
Representative Carlson.
No, good question. I assume they have a Department of Ed. You'd minimally need someone to handle your school finances and other issues. But I've never really looked into whether they actually have a department. My assumption is that they would. Maybe staff would know.
And I do know, you're talking about Wisconsin was one,
yes,
right? Commissioner Segrin, if she was here, she just met with Representative Mariani and myself last week, and we're talking about a proposal to make to Washington jointly with those three states, and she has worked with those commissioners who, mm-hmm. at least Wisconsin, has. I think they all do. Mm-hmm. It's not something separate, because the State Board of Education was to work with the department and the legislature. They're kind of a go-between, and so that we had, it was more policy-oriented, not quite as partisan, you know, when you have two different parties, and there's, you know, to be the more long-term people and thinking about things, having more time, not having to be under the pressures that elected officials are under with deadlines and things. And often we gave them, which is part of their demise, you know, some hot potatoes to deal with, and we criticize them for that.
Thank you. I have one other question as well. Maybe you can enlighten me. Why is it that just the Senate has approval for the members and not the House? You started to talk about that a little bit, but is there a reason why we just have one body of government doing that?
I think I'm going to let Representative Carlson answer that, because I was mentioning the Senate. It was a Senate position to get rid of the State Board of Education, but the actual approval process, we'll let Representative Carlson explain.
So much of this bill is modeled after what we had historically, and that's one of the positions, most of the positions where you do require Senate confirmation of the Senate only. I think the Ethical Practices Board, if I recall correctly, is the only one that requires approval of both House Senate.
And the regents.
Oh, and the regents. Of course, yeah, there we elect them. So that would be the second one.
But the Senate always get all the publicity when the commissioners are being approved and everything, and people sometimes give us input, and we have to tell them we don't have a say in that. It's just the Senate.
And Madam Chair, just going back to that first question, as I mentioned, in Wisconsin, they do have a commissioner that is elected, and I would be very surprised if that commissioner doesn't have staff and mm-hmm. probably a Department of Education that he or she would head.
Okay, seeing no more questions then, I renew my motion that House File 466, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Yeah,
thank you, and members of the committee.
And our final bill is Representative Swales, who is on the committee, so she can move her own bill. Welcome, Representative Quayle.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. To the table, not to the committee.
Yes. I would like to move House File 106, but I don't know what the next stop would be.
Representative Quayle, move House File 106 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Oh, okay. I was under the understanding, Madam Chair, that it might have to go to state government. Is that not the case? No. They didn't ask for it.
No, I think that might be your other bill, though, that's going to have to go there.
All right.
Well, this is a busy week for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was under the understanding that this might have to go elsewhere. This was thoroughly vetted in education policy, and we heard it last term as well. And it was a part of the education omnibus bill that was vetoed. So we are reintroducing it again. The P20 partnership is an expansion of the current P16 partnership, which includes preschool through graduate school or people working on their doctoral dissertations in education. What it does, we already have a P20 partnership that is in existence. It includes members from many organizations, including the University of Minnesota, MinSCU, the Private College Council, the Department of Education, PTSA, Education Minnesota, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, School Board Association, Citizens League, and so forth and so on. Many, many members. But there are some members who are not invited to be members of the P16 partnership that we currently have, and that's legislative voices at the table. And so this bill is simply asking that we have one member of the House Majority Party and one member from the Minority Party, one member in the Senate from the Majority Party and one from the Minority Party to be added to the table, so that as innovations are discussed and much of the new trends in education are being debated and talked about, that there's also an avenue for being able to implement those in terms of policy. And so it is my hope that this committee, who I think is very familiar now with the issues around the P16 partnership, would be willing to support this. Included in your packets was an article that I had printed about Governor Ritter from Colorado. And it's interesting, in Colorado, I believe the lieutenant governor is the chair of the P16 partnership there. And we have done a lot of research on this area, and the most effective partnerships in the nation are those where the governor or lieutenant governor are members of the commission or leading them, and where legislators are actively involved. I also would like to, I have an article with me, I don't believe we had it published for this committee, although we did for the Education Policy Committee. The Education Commission of the States, the ECS, where Governor Plenty is currently the chair, they strongly support P16 partnerships with legislators at the table. And so if you are curious about that, I do have the article related to that as well. So with that said, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from the members? Representative Biscuit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swales, would it be your intention, and is it somewhere here in the legislation where the legislators, because I noticed the fiscal note says no cost, right? Is there a prohibition from the legislators receiving per diem or mileage for their participation on this?
Representative Swales.
Madam Chair and Representative Vistens, I've not been asked that question before, and I don't know. Perhaps Mr. Strom might have some historical background that would... Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, I don't know. I'll get back to you in a few minutes. And Representative Biskin. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is the motion to lay over for possible inclusion?
Representative Biskin, that is the motion.
Okay, Madam Chair, and I know that you are very protective of the dollars this committee produces, and if this language doesn't prohibit, then there will be, of course, a fiscal note, particularly as I look at page 2, line 14, where we're not only asking this group for recommendations for rigorous standards, we're actually asking them to create the rigorous standards in teacher preparation. Madam Chair, you know that takes a long time and is a lot of work, and the dollars could rack up pretty quickly if there isn't a prohibition on per diem and mileage.
And Representative Biskins, I suspect that you know, you could talk with Representative Swales if she wants to put in language like that and work with you. That's her prerogative. I would just say that when members on this committee go to meetings, and we're not, if obviously we're in session, we're already getting per diem. If we're not in session, then when we have official committee meetings, people, members can ask for per diem, and some take it and some do not. When I ask someone to go and give a, I myself don't take per diem when we're in the interim, but or nor for special sessions. But when we someone represents me and they have to travel or give a speech or something, then if they want per diem, we give it to them. But quite frankly, as Representative Swell said, this has not been asked before, and it's a good question, and we should, if we don't want to have that opportunity, because I think it would be in that area where the person could ask the committee of jurisdiction to have per diem, and it could be granted unless we prohibit it. This year, of course, we don't have committee budgets, so no one could ask me anything.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and sometimes that's a good problem to have as the chair of a committee. Madam Chair, also, you know, you could create a situation where you know, some members could receive up to $76 a day for participation on this committee. Other members receive up to $99 a day for participation, and those who are not serving in the legislature, of course, get $0 a day for participation. So it'd be an interesting dynamic among the group members, Representative Swales. I'm not sure you want to go down that road, but your bill.
And Representative Swales, I don't know if you have any thoughts on it, or you want to just talk to Representative Biskins as
well. Well, I proceed. Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, I certainly could talk to you about this, but the members who do travel long distances to participate in this, from a variety of college settings, they may charge back to their colleges for mileage. I have no idea how that works. But it is a voluntary committee. It is one that if I would serve, I would not expect per diem. I would just, but yes, I have a good heart. That's correct. But I'm sorry, but that's an issue that probably I should spend some time visiting with council about and just, you know, see what their recommendation would be. But I also know that we have some missed opportunities. When this council has been in existence for 5 years, they have had some wonderful conversations and innovations around the 3 R's that we turned into the 4 R's, things that happened before we heard the information here at the legislature. And to be a part of those discussions and innovations, to me, would be a tremendous opportunity.
Very good. We have Representative Demmer and then Representative Van Zels. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swell, first a comment. I know we talked about this in policy, about the C16 partnership, and now going to this, and I'll be interested in if there's any more conversation about that. But I do have a kind of a specific thing that just jumped at me here, and it's on lines, the appointment from the two bodies.
Mm-hmm.
In the House body, we have an appointment by the minority leader of the House and an appointment by the Speaker. And in the Senate, we have a subcommittee appointing the members. Why do we go that direction instead of having the Senate leader report, or like you do in the House, have a Senate majority leader appoint a senator and the Senate minority appoint a senator? Why don't we do the same thing there that we do in the House?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, you know, that's also another excellent question. And this bill did originate in the Senate. I am carrying it in partnership with Senator Weaver. And I will just have to say that this is the language that originated in the Senate. If you'd like to change it, I would be open to, and very open to an amendment that would do that.
Representative Swales, this actually is how they do it in the Senate, and we'll have Mr. Strom explain it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, the Senate has a process whereby all appointments in general are done through the subcommittee on subcommittees. So it's not just for this task force, but that's their standard procedure. In almost every bill that recommends a task force or a council, if there's any other language suggesting how the Senate would choose its members, it would change that and have this particular group appoint the membership. That's the model that the Senate uses.
That's even how they appoint their committees. Representative Demmer.
Okay, that's interesting. I think they do in some circumstances, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember a specific one, but we do have situations where they do have the majority leader and the minority leader appoint their respective members. Isn't that true?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, there may be a bill or two that they don't agree to that goes that direction, but I know it's the general custom of the Senate that all appointments of members come through that subcommittee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Getting back to what Representative Diskins raised about funding this, I hope you remember that this is a statewide effort and that it ought to be available as equal as possible to people from all over the state. I look at the list of the P16 membership, and it's decidedly metropolitan without one recognizable rural person. Not one recognizable rural person. And oftentimes, because of the funding issue with Representative Diskins raised, rural Minnesota is short-sighted, and while I'm a co-sponsor of this, I would urge you to rethink how this is funded, and so that participation is a little more equal.
Representative Wells.
Madam Chair and Representative Anzels, I do believe that many of the members who particularly represent the Minsky system do come from a variety of the colleges that are in outstate Minnesota. You may not consider them rural because they come from academia, but they would argue that they may very well represent those more rural interests.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Swales, we're all getting into it. That conjures up, again, more inequality, not less, and so I'll let that go.
And that would go along with, if you did not have per diem, it would be at a disadvantage for greater Minnesota participation.
Yes.
Because obviously it wouldn't just be a meeting and then go right straight back home.
And Madam Chair, that is noted.
Well,
that is noted, so thank you.
Let's see, Representative Epstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swales, I do believe we discussed this in education policy, but refresh my memory. I think that the four legislative members will be non-voting members. Is that correct?
Representative
Wells. Madam Chair, Representative Depp, do you know that is not correct? They would be full participants in the body. But I believe it was Ms. Christ from Minsky who said that they have a very informal structure, that it really is a group that they don't have like they don't have bylaws, I'm sorry. I was trying to think of the right word. But they operate more out of a sense of consensus and information sharing. And she stated in her testimony that very rarely do they have official votes.
I just was concerned that it would appear if we have, this is an advisory group to the legislature. If we have legislative representation that also votes, that it might, you know, be something they would feel more uncomfortable with that. It's a little bit of a conflict of interest.
Madam,
I don't know whether that's the right word. But
Madam Chair and Representative Deputy, there are 30 P16 or P20 partnerships throughout the nation, and many of them have active participation by legislators, more members than the four that we're recommending here. My first exposure to a P16 partnership was when I took the trip with Representative Greiling and McFarland. We went to Austin, Texas to visit their P16 partnership there, and it was chaired by the State Chamber of Commerce president, and the legislature was actively involved in that, and the dialogue and the conversation and the whole energy around their partnership was much, much more proactive in moving innovations forward. Much of what happens here, we have this wonderful group of professionals who come together and they discuss all these trends and innovations in education. But because there's no one to translate that into legislation, and often we don't even hear about the trends until a State of the State address or something comes out in testimony from the department, we are not in the loop. And so, no, I do not believe for an instant that there would be discomfort in having legislators there. I think they would be the voice that is able to translate the new trends and the new possibilities into actual policy that we could be working on here at the Capitol.
Okay, very well. No more questions, any testimony? Okay. Is there any testimony? All right, hearing none, one more question. Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swales, you just brought up something about our trip, and I'm just wondering if there would be any reason, if this moves forward, that we would not add a business person from the business community as a member.
Representative Swales.
Madam Chair and Representative McFarland, I don't have my file here, but there are members of the business community who are currently serving on the chamber is there. I believe the Minnesota Business Partnership is a part of it. Yes, Madam Chair. Bill Blazer from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce serves on it. Robert Brunick, Tom Dewar. There is someone from the Minnesota Citizens League. So I'm not able to decipher this very quickly, but yes, the business community is represented.
Very good, and I think that it's been kind of informal, and that's the way the group likes it, and so to not be too prescriptive of their desire, but for the fact that they won't include legislators and hence this bill. So if there are no more questions, Representative Swales renews her motion that House File 106 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And members, we're out of business, so the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.